I like good looking people. I like to think I'm myself and I'm one of the good looking people. Welcome to episode number 56 of the Filmed Insert Music Video Land podcast, put on by your friends at filmedinsert.com. Excuse me. My name is Adam Fairholm, and then with me, as always, we have Mr. Doug Klinger in Boynton Beach, Florida. How are you, Doug?
Doing super good, Adam. How are you? Coming clean through the proper places?
Yes. I'm sorry about last week's episode. I was very angry at myself. My computer has been unplugging, so I was talking into my laptop speakers without knowing it. But anyway, we have more bigger things to talk about on this podcast because we have a really great interview, this podcast, and that is with Brother Ali. And he has a lot going on right now. He has a new tour that's actually the day we interviewed him was the first night of the tour, just last week. The Morning in America tour, which is going all over the place. It's actually stopping by both of us in Boynton Beach, in Florida, as well as North Carolina. And then we have the actual album, Morning in America and Dreamy in Color, which comes out on September 18th.
Fans of the podcast, because I know most of you guys have listened to every episode ever who are listening right now, will remember that we interviewed Todd Onkosuwon not too long ago, and Todd is the director of one of Brother Ali's more recent videos. He just recently released his second video off the Morning in America and Dreaming in Color album, and Todd directed the first video off of that, which is titled Morning in America.
And the second one is Only Life I Know, directed by Dave Wilson, who is a collaborator, a music video collaborator with Brother Ali. He's directed several of his other videos. So definitely check those out for the interview. And For those of you who don't know, Brother Ali is a rapper, and as he mentions in his introduction, one of the first things that's usually said about him is that he's, first of all, albino and a Muslim. So he gets a lot of press for not only his music and also his music videos, but also for a lot of the political content that he has in his songs and his videos. He's actually been featured on Huffington Post. If you're a frequent Huffington Post reader like I am, out of force of habit, you will see. He said quite a few stories pop up on there, including an op-ed that he recently wrote. So we're going to talk to Brother Ali in the second half of the show. If you're new to the podcast, which many of you may be, we have our interview in the second half, and then we talk amongst ourselves, talking about a music video topic in the front first 15 minutes or so. So, Doug, mentioned the Shine On video directed by Dave Wilson, which has a very literal interpretation of the lyrics. The lyrics of Shine On are basically this serves as a script for the actual video. It's a great video. Definitely check it out. But that got me thinking about different kinds of literal interpretations of videos. And one of my favorites, and this kind of new thing that's come about in the last only really 2 years, is known as the lyric video. Are you familiar with these, Doug?
Absolutely familiar with the lyric video. My grandfather would say, I used to call those karaoke videos.
Exactly. Right.
It's a horrible joke, and I don't even have a living grandfather, so I should have not.
It got sad real quick. We should start off by defining what a lyric video is, because maybe you haven't seen one before. Basically, if you have a big pop artist like Britney Spears or Taylor Swift, and they have a music video, you usually can type in, you know, the name of the artist in YouTube, the search bar, the name of the artist, the name of the song, and lyric video. And, you know, for a lot of recent songs, there will be a video that's not the official video. Almost definitely came out well before the official video, and has some sort of animation or lyrics over it. So you watch the song, and then the lyrics come up, and you can follow along. That's the basic gist of it.
Yeah, and I think these probably originated with fan-made stuff. And then Vivo kind of swooped in and started doing some official versions of it. And that's why you've seen more recently coming from official sources than the last few years, because I think you've been seeing them on YouTube since YouTube kind of began, because people have always been looking for a place to kind of display their songs on the internet, and there isn't really a standardized place to do that. And so since YouTube has a lot of viewers and a lot of, you know, users, they just put the audio track and, you know, a variety of things. I actually think they originated with people putting weird pictures. Do you remember those videos?
Oh, there's so many of them. I'm sure there still are.
And I think that those kind of evolved into the lyric videos. I'm a little bummed that Vivo hasn't adopted the weird picture video thing. But yeah, I think that's been the case, because they're still just as valuable than a music video. They still get tons of hits.
Right. I think they're, you know, the important thing is you know, two points that an artist is looking at. Like, so let's say you are Britney Spears and you're releasing a video for what's that song? Criminal. This is one of the an early example of a lyric video from 2010. And, you know, your video is in production or it is, you know, not been released yet. Well, you could, you know, and you want to get that track out there. And what you want to do is control the experience. So you don't want, if somebody wants to listen to your track, you don't want to put it somewhere where they're going to easily be able to rip the MP3, right? You know, there are a lot of different options for hosting audio. You could even just throw it up on an FTP, but you know, it's probably going to be pretty easy to get that audio. YouTube doesn't have that problem usually, because as of late they've really cracked down on these like YouTube video to MP3 converters. But you also want to control the experience, right? You don't want it to be some Windows Movie Maker where somebody, it's like the blue, you know, that blue text with the white, or the blue background with the white text, where they just put up the lyrics and maybe they get some of them wrong and stuff like that. So if, you know, you have tons of fans that want to hear, you know, Criminal by Britney Spears, and then you have a problem on YouTube, they're all looking for this song, and then they're all finding these usually crappy fan-made versions.
And also it could be not the official mix of the song. You know, somebody could have gotten an illegal download of a group rip and not the web rip, or what. I don't know how those terms, but
no, that definitely happens. Yeah.
And then they post the non-official version of the song, or, you know, in the case of Kanye West, he'll have to re-record them completely, and you still got the old versions out there. So you definitely want to be able to control a lot of the aspects of it. And you know, lyric videos are still, you know, visually appealing to a certain degree, and some even take it further than that. And either way, for the most part, they're still going to end up being much cheaper than a music video. And I wonder, do you think some artists go out there and test the audience with songs through that way? Like maybe put two songs out there that they're deciding which one they're going to do the video for, and whatever one kind of, you know, it's like they're polling them against each other, like lyric videos for two songs.
I have no clue about that, but
come on, Adam, get your inside info hat on.
I don't really think so, because, you know, one of the reasons that we're talking about lyric videos here is because they're starting to be used as a promotional tool, and they're starting to go up and up and up in production values and be promoted a lot and get a lot of views. And this is just really a very, very recent phenomenon in the past, you know, 2, maybe 3 years. And I, you know, some of these are getting just massive, massive views. And, you know, we should mention, the revenue sharing model of YouTube has a lot to do with this, because like we said, if you have traffic, this demand for a song going into, you know, 100 different fan made videos with lyrics up on there, then you're losing all that, you know, revenue sharing for clicks. If you're an official source, you know, like the band.
I was just going to say there's no additional value for the ad over top of a video if it's a lyric video or an official music video. YouTube doesn't like give you extra money because it's an official music video versus a lyric video, if all they care about is who's looking at the ads and who's clicking in them. So if a lyric video is getting more clicks, that's probably cool with the label.
So maybe we should talk about some specific lyric videos that we enjoy, because both, you know, all sides of the spectrum are doing this. We have, you know, huge pop stars doing this. And we also have independent artists doing it as well. So, you know, right off the bat, I want to bring up one that, as far as I know, has the most views I've seen of a music, of a lyric video. And if I'm wrong, somebody please correct us on Twitter or something like that. And I believe that is Maroon 5 featuring Christina Aguilera, Moves Like Jagger. And currently, as of recording time, they have 111,635,000 views on this lyric video. And it's a great lyric video. Have you, you know, it's basically got the three M's. You know, the song is that really steady backbeat. It's got three M's, RGB colors, and they're like bound, you know, they're vibrating with the music and moving around. And there's this black bar in the middle with the lyrics. But you know, that's all it is. It's not the actual music video.
I don't think that's. I think that's. I would qualify that one as a phoned-in one. I don't know.
Really, that's a good one. I like it.
I've seen some that are just. And I'll get into some. There are a lot of text-based ones, right? There are some that I mean, they all obviously are text-based because they're lyric videos, but there are some that are just clearly computer-generated text-based. And a lot of times it's just – sometimes it literally will just be the words faded up and down. And that one maybe has a little bit more life to them. But sometimes there are some that are really like – there's a lot of, you know, camera movement, post-production camera movement and – you know, effects with the text going on, and there are even more once you get into some of the more independent artists. You'll see some of these lyric videos that are really like big animated pieces on their own. Like video I saw by a group, Cassettes Won't Listen, and the song is Falling Apart. They essentially animated a cartoon. Directed by Mike Amin, and it's essentially a cartoon with the lyrics. And so I think that's probably one of the best when it comes to the computer generated one. So I'm calling Moves Like Jagger phoned in.
Describe what that video is because it's really creative that, you know, instead of using the words, I mean, there's words there, but the words form different pictures and form the animation. So there's a head formed out of the lyrics with the lips moving.
The Cassettes Won't Listen video, right. Yes, that's a relatively recent video, and it was actually commissioned by Radar Music Videos, if you've heard of them.
We definitely have heard of them. Another one that is, we'll talk about them on a different podcast, because I'd like to, it deserves, maybe we can have them on. Another one that has been very popular is the CeeLo Green, we're an explicit podcast, the CeeLo Green Fuck You video, which is really neat. It's a very typography based video. I think people who are fans of typography and type are probably fans of this lyric video phenomenon, because the entire video is like those Chevy, you know, those Ford F-150 commercials with Dennis Leary narrating, where the words are, you know, popping up and moving around and things like that. But it's very, very simple. It's just different colored backgrounds with the words.
But less phoned in, I think, than the Moves Like Jagger. See, I give that one a little bit more credit. Well, on my meter of how much credit I give, that one gets more. So it's important. People must know that.
And so I think the one that really, for me, blurs the lyric video, that blurs the line between an actual music video and a lyric video, is a really recent one for Taylor Swift's song We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together, directed by Declan Whitebloom. And the main video, not the lyric video. And the lyric video has a good amount of 15 million views on YouTube. Obviously not anywhere near the 111 of Moves Like Jagger, but it is fully stop motion animated. So all the lyrics are appearing in these little scenes that are not computer generated, obviously. They might have had some computer generated help. But it's really, you know, like a kind of cut and paste, move things around, you know, cotton balls for clouds. Really beautifully done and really well done lyric video. And each of the scenes has something a little bit to do with the lyrics. So obviously somebody spent some time and some budget for this video, definitely. It almost could be considered an alternate, I think, in my mind. But it is definitely classified by them as a lyric video.
So anyway, there are some great lyric videos. Those are some great ones that you mentioned, and the ones that I mentioned were good.
Well, there are tons of them. And, you know, one of the, you know, we saw this, we were just kind of, after the Taylor Swift one we saw, we were kind of talking about it a few weeks ago, and we decided to make lyric videos something that you can add to videos. So if you're part of the beta And when the beta is lifted, any user can do this. Just click add info, and you can just add the URL, Vimeo or YouTube at the moment, of a lyric video for a music video, and then it'll be listed right in the, you know, the data area for a video. So we definitely want to track those. We're not tracking director or any crew for any of them, but we're definitely tracking them.
Yeah, make note of them. So get on in there, get up in the beta, get up in the adding stuff, and get up in the lyric videos. And so after that, you should listen to this interview.
That's right. We're very excited to welcome to the podcast Brother Ali, who is, as we mentioned at the top, a rapper who has, out of the Midwest, out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, who has a really great stable of music videos for a number of reasons. Number one, he has worked with some great directors like Todd Nkosuo and like Dave Wilson. And he has a lot of politically charged content like Morning in America and Only Life I Know, his two most recent music videos. He has a tour that he's on right now, and he's also releasing the Morning in America album, Morning in America and Dreaming in Color album. So check out those videos, but first, check out our interview with Brother Ali.
I'm Brother Ali. I'm a hip-hop artist out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. I come from a collective of independent artists in the underground called Rhymesayers Entertainment. A lot of people know our flagship group, which kind of started our movement, which is called Atmosphere. You know, a lot of people, in the first paragraph of every story about me, they always write that I'm a Muslim, and that I'm also an albino, and that I just kind of have a unique outlook on life, and I write songs that are really really kind of descriptive of the way that I see the world and the way that I experience the world. I'm also legally blind, so I just kind of have a unique take on things. I didn't have any particular team that I could just join socially, so I had to kind of navigate my own way. And it made for a really kind of peculiar way of thinking about things and seeing things. And that's helped me out in writing songs. I also rap very, very, very well. And so I write really good, and I rap it really good.
And, you know, one of the reasons, or one of the many reasons we want to talk to you, is because, you know, what you're doing in the music video world is really, you know, along with your music, is really interesting, really unique. And, you know, I've heard you say that, you know, as far as, you know, marketing yourself, you know, nowadays you are the marketing department for getting your name out there. And I was just wondering, where do you see music videos as fitting into, you know, an overall marketing plan for you? How big do music videos factor into that?
It's crazy. It's so much. I mean, I don't want to say it's everything, because I want to still believe that the music is everything, and that all the other stuff is our accessories. But, you know, just with the way that people relate to the world now is very visual, whereas people even relate to their music visually. We relate to each other visually, which is strange for me, because, like I said, I'm legally blind, so I can see, but not well enough to really do the things that other people do. You know what I mean? So for me to have to, you know, kind of translate to that world, the way that I do it is describe what I want people to take from the video. I describe the scenes that I'd like to show people, and then I have to rely on directors and directors of photography to really kind of pull that off. And so, you know, we release songs all the time. We'll make an announcement about something all the time. But until there's a video for it, it's almost like it's not real to people. You know, which is an interesting commentary on where we're at socially, that we just don't believe things unless we see them. But those visual things can be very deceptive. And so it's very interesting that we relate to things in such a inauthentic way. Not that video can't be authentic, because it can be. And not that we can't mislead with other types of communication, because we can. But there's something particular about video, about the way that you shoot things, the way that you light things. You know, there's only so much you can do with a microphone and effects you know, to make your voice sound a certain way. But there's a lot you can do to make things look cooler than they are. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So is that the way your relationship with directors will often work? You tell them the idea you're trying to get across and you leave it to them to get it across for you?
Yeah, I talk to people about the ideas. You know, I know what the song feels like to me, and I know what I see in my head when I made the song. And so I get a feel for the person. If I feel like they understand what I'm saying, what I'm going for, and what I would like to see, then I kind of have to trust them with it. The Morning in America video, which is the first one from this album, the guy's name that directed is Todd, and I'm not 100% on how to pronounce his last name.
It's on Kasawan. We had him a couple weeks back on the show.
Oh, nice. Dope.
Yeah,
he's great, man. He's great, and I sat and wrote a list. This video is about violence and death and murder and all aspects of murder in American life. So the drone attacks that we perpetuate in other countries, the terrorism we experience, the, you know, street crime violence that we experience, you know, killing and assassinating political leaders, lethal injection, electric chair, capital punishment, all this stuff. So, you know, I basically made a list of all these things that I wanted him to depict. And he did a lot of those, but then he also came with a few of them as well. You know, I brought in a crew of extremely talented, amazing young Muslim women that wear full burqas. And, you know, that actual veil is called a niqab. They wear the veil, and but they're pop lockers. Like, they're poppers and lockers. They break dance with that on. And it's amazing. But then Todd brought in some really cool ideas as well. Like, so much of, you know, what I've been trying to do with this album and this song is just kind of take the ideas that we have as a society and turn them backwards, just kind of flip them around to say, you know, one person's warfare is another person's terrorism. And, you know, it really depends on who you are in relation to the violence that's happening, to how you see it. You know, and so he had the idea to have, you know, U.S. soldiers carrying one of their fallen comrades, and but they're wearing masks, and they take their masks off, and they're Arab American soldiers, U.S. soldiers, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of those ideas he actually brought into it, and that meant a lot. But it just, you know, we sat down in L.A. and played in the song, and he was excited, and he just kept talking. I'm like, okay, this is the guy. The video that came out today is called Only Life I Know, and that's a song about what it's like to be trapped in poverty. And the brother that shot that one's name is Dave Wilson, and he grew up homeless, you know, living in all kinds of situations, you know, tents, and he lived in reservations and teepees, and like, he lived in the desert, and, you know, lived under bridges and just in cars and all that kind of stuff. And so he really got it. I've been poor, and I've been, you know, a certain degree of homeless, but he spent his entire childhood like that, and still sometimes will just not have an apartment, even though he's a working director. He did Frank Ocean video. He did a bunch of videos for us. You know, he's a working director, he's, you know, but there's times where he'll just be homeless almost on purpose. And so I knew he'd be perfect to, like, go out in the street and, like, really capture that. So it's dope, you know what I mean? Like, get these people that just really get it and can do the work that I can't do because I just literally can't see to do it.
Now, you know, you mentioned the Morning in America video, which, you know, as you mentioned, has such, you know, provocative, political, and, you know, thought-provoking imagery. And, you know, it was interesting that, you know, one of the places that it premiered was on Huffington Post, which is a news site, and we're seeing that, you know, more where videos will kind of appear in places that are not, you know, MTV premieres or something like that. It'll be in a different venue. Was there any decision around, you know, premiering, you know, political video like that in on a political site?
Well, you know, yes. Kind of my thinking is, you know, when I went into this album, I let the, you know, my friends at the label basically know that this is going to be a really, album that focuses a lot on social and political issues, and that it wasn't going to be as, you know, in the past I've always made music that I was kind of inviting people to be more human. I was inviting people to see themselves and others, and inviting people to, you know, keep track of and affirm other people's humanity. But it was a kind of an open-ended, non-confrontational tone that I always took. And I felt like with this album that I didn't want to do that only. There still is some of that, because it's based on love. It's based on the fact that we're all humans, human beings. There's an instinctual understanding that we all deserve to be afforded a certain level of dignity and respect just for having membership in the human family. I think that's what's natural. I don't think it's natural to completely disregard somebody else and devalue other people's humanity. I think that's learned behavior. So I've always kind of touched on that, and there still is some of that in this album. But this is a lot more challenging. It's a lot more demanding. It's a lot, you know, I've had listeners that have taken my words and they've heard what they want to hear, and they actually changed the meaning of what I'm saying to mean something almost opposite of what I'm saying. And so I wanted to have certain statements on this album that you cannot, there's no out. You either don't listen to this, or you have to confront what I'm presenting you with. And so when I knew that there was going to be some stuff like that on this album, and the label said, okay, we're with you 100%. If that's what's in your heart to do, and you know, we're dear friends, so they knew that I'm sure I didn't even have to tell them that's where I was going. They kind of knew it. They said, if that's what you're doing, just know some of your fans are not going to go along with you on this ride. And so it's going to be important to, pick up listeners and support from people who aren't already thinking like that. You know, I've never really solicited that kind of support before. I've never, you know, really done a whole lot of speaking at colleges and, you know, going and performing at the Democratic Convention and all that kind of stuff. I've never really done all of that stuff, you know what I mean? I've just been in the music world. And so, the idea was kind of that it'd be good to at least expose what we're doing to that sector of the population, so that if they feel like it's useful to them and that they enjoy it, that they have the opportunity to support it.
So then I wonder, has that move worked out for you, premiering it on Huffington Post? Have you found that your music is reaching a broader audience that is more in tune to the subject matter that you're dealing with on this album and in that video that maybe wouldn't be premiering it elsewhere?
Maybe. It's hard to know. There wasn't a lot of, like, just looking at the comments on YouTube, there weren't a lot of negative ones, which makes me think, whenever there's not negative comments, that means that you're really only hitting your target base, you know, and that you're not expanding outside your base. The idea with the video was to challenge people, and so I was hoping to get a lot more fuck you, you know, which is what insecure, immature people who live in a death-denying Disneyland society like ours, that's what we do when we're challenged. You know, we declare war. You know what I mean? When somebody asks us to do something other than what we're used to doing, we declare war on them. And so I was expecting to get a lot more of that, and the fact that we didn't makes me think that we haven't quite pushed those buttons yet. I'm not quite sure how to do that. The structure isn't in place to make message music and have it heard by the public.
Now, you're the first artist we've talked to who has embraced negative YouTube content comments. That's a new perspective for us, but it makes sense.
I think it's a way to track a certain segment of people. That's not everybody, but you know, if all of your comments are saying something, you know, there's a common trend or theme, it does give you some insight into what casual observers are saying or what your core fans are saying or whoever is showing up on those comments.
Now, I also wanted to ask about the correlation between the Morning in America video and the Uncle Sam Goddamn video from 2007, because a recent op-ed from you came out, talking about, about Tyler the Creator and Frank Ocean, and talking about your growth as an artist, in the musical sense. Do you also see that growth, manifested in, a music video form? I just see those two music videos dealing in similar topics, but in a much different way.
Yeah, well, the Uncle Sam Goddamn song and video is talking about the legacy of pain. It's talking about the underside of the American experience. You know, and that came out, post 9/11, George Bush era, when we were all being sold this kind of gung-ho, us or them, America's the number one in everything idea of what America is, and, blind patriotism. And so that video was basically to cut up against that grain and say, there are a lot of people who have suffered and who have, their lives have been destroyed so that some people can have what they perceive to be the American dream. And that, so that's dealing with more of like the historical context.
Mm-hmm.
Morning in America deals specifically with violence. I think that blind patriotism has kind of dwindled because so many people are in poverty now. So many people are struggling now that the idea of America being number one just isn't there anymore. It, I don't think it's the prevalent dominant country.
And is that the nerve you want to hit with the Only Life I Know video to just play that poverty, that reality that's happening now?
Yeah, I wanted to humanize the poor. You know what I mean? I wanted to show what that really feels like to be trapped in poverty, to just know that this is my life and that no matter what I do, whether that's true or not, you know what I mean? People who are not in that situation, it's very easy to say, well, if you work hard and you so-and-so and you just do everything you're supposed to do, but there's a lot of people that do everything they're supposed to do for their entire life and they die broke and penniless and own nothing and leave nothing to their children and, and it's not because they weren't smart, it's not because they weren't moral, it's not because they had bad work ethics, that's just the way our society is engineered, that some people just don't have a shot. And the fact that a few exceptional ones, Jay-Z just said the other day that he doesn't understand what the Occupy movement is about. And he made it out. But he's also, 99th percentile of intelligence and charisma and talent. And, he's just one of the smartest human beings in entertainment. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, you made it out. That's amazing. You made it out. You're to be commended for that. And I don't look at Jay-Z as being the 1%. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that the average person that comes from where Jay-Z comes from doesn't have, most people aren't A students. The average person is a C student. And so a C student in Marshall Project or, in the Fifth Ward of Houston or in the Appalachian, they don't have the same opportunities that a C student has, in the suburbs of Denver. They just don't have the same opportunities. Their life is not going to end up being the same. So the idea is to humanize the poor, show who they really are, show the fact that it's not just people of color, that it's not just, drug dealers and welfare queens the way that we're portrayed, but that it's moms and it's old people and it's young people and it's people getting up every day trying to find work and people getting up and going to work every day and just don't make enough to really make ends meet. And, and then there's some people that work just isn't an option for them, so they hustle, they do alternative, businesses, sell drugs or whatever. So, with that one, I was really trying to highlight that.
So, you have videos that, like the Only Life I Know that came out today in Morning in America that deal with heavy subjects. And then, you also have a video like Shine On, which is directed by Dave Wilson, which is, a really funny, lighthearted video. Was it, was it enjoyable to kind of shoot something that was more of a comedy, and get kind of a break from other material? How'd you enjoy that process?
Definitely, yeah, that one was a lot of fun. And Dave Wilson is actually the same guy that shot Only Life I Know video, same dude. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that one was a lot of fun because just the surroundings and the, you know, it was kind of a last minute shoot. It was interesting with that one because Nikki Jean, who is an incredible singer, she's, you know, grew up in a couple different places in her childhood, but one of them was the Twin Cities. And just really extremely bright pianist and songwriter and singer. And she also happens to be drop dead gorgeous. And she had a record deal with Sony for a while, and they kind of had the idea of making her the new Alicia Keys, you know, the singer-songwriter, you know, super pretty girl. So they had her co-write songs with, like, some of the most amazing songwriters of our time, like Burt Bacharach and Carole King and Bob Dylan and others, and ended up doing this entire album with her and then decided not to release it. And just kind of shelved it. So she's kind of starting over now after having done enormous work. She's starting over as an independent artist now. But so she sang the chorus for me as a favor, just on some friendship stuff, like, you know, we're dear friends. And I brought her to town to record the chorus and do the video. And kind of in a moment of blind male privilege, I guess, I just assumed that she'd be the romantic interest in the video. And when she showed up, she said, "Man, I hate to do this, but we never really talked about this, but I don't do the pretty girl in the video thing because I need to be known as a singer and songwriter." And if she's like, that's one of the things with Sony, is I wouldn't just let them make me the pretty girl. I need for the world to know that the way that they relate to me is as a musician and as somebody who has something to say. And so that was the night before the shoot. And so I was like, wow, that's amazing. You know what I mean? I have utmost respect for that when I think about it. She hasn't really done a lot of music videos. And she's actually turned a lot of stuff down where people were trying to get her to do that. And so the director, Dave Wilson, actually found, he had a friend that just was able to step in, and she nailed it. She did a great job. Her facial expressions and everything were perfect. That one was really fun. We just shot it in a day. And what's really dope to me, and this was my one contribution to that whole process, that was on a free EP called The Bite Marked Heart, which came out on Valentine's Day. And Ron Sayers, we're connected to this restaurant called Heidi's, an upscale restaurant, really fly, really nice, you know, trendy kind of restaurant, amazing food. Dude that owns it is incredible, him and his wife. But they have a mural that's painted by an artist that's a great friend of mine named Eric Inkela, this heart. And I said, okay, I want to use that as the cover for the album. And then we also shot the video there. So that at the end of the video, when I'm walking away from the girl, you see that mural in the background, and that's actually the cover of the album.
Oh, nice. That's cross-promotion right there.
Yeah, I don't know how many people really caught it, but I was very, very proud of myself. I felt like I actually had a visual artistic moment for a second.
Oh, nice. And before we let you go, I wanted to ask about one more video, and that is one of my favorites, which is the Breaking Dawn video, directed by Chris Glebe, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. And it's different in your canon of videos because it's an animated video. And it, you know, it tells a story. I was just wondering how you came to, because you mentioned that you know you talk about the feeling of a video to a director. Did you come to Chris Glebe with the idea of doing an animated film, or did that come from him?
Well, we've known him for a long time. We met him as a graffiti artist named Devious, he's done a lot of work with Rhyme Series. He designed our logo. It was like an Atmosphere logo, like their main logo. He designed that too. He's done t-shirts and stuff for us and all kind of things. He's just all around, like, really cool visual artist. And so I think the idea was always just kind of in the air that one day somebody on Rhymesayers would do an animated video with him. And with the Us album, which was my last album that came out in 2009, I had a really hard time trying to figure out how to do videos for that album. And we really only did two. We did that one, and then we did one of me in the studio just rapping one of the songs, and then footage from the recording process. But that animated video came about because I just couldn't figure out how to hire actors and how to just visualize some of these like songs that were conceptual and had a lot to do with people. And there was cultural and racial elements of the conversation that I'm having on those songs. And so to have them depicted improperly would be, you could really take things in the wrong direction. You could really end up saying something very different than what the songs are saying. So with that, at least I trusted that, you know, there's just so much trust, man. Like, this music means a lot to me. I'm not just making fun-ass, you know, jump around and act stupid songs. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just not what I do. I make songs that mean a lot to me, and they're about people. They're about me, and they're about people that I love and care about. And it's really hard for me to trust directors to portray those.
I wanted to ask you one more, and tell me if it's too personal, because you mentioned that, you know, that you are legally blind, and since, you know, music videos are you know, a visual medium, when you finish a music video with a director, I mean, you know, how much can you evaluate the output or the actual finished product of the video? Because we've never talked to anybody who, you know, an artist who, you know, has some trouble, you know, seeing the finished product.
I can see them. You know, there's things where they're like, well, I'm going to color correct this. Mm-hmm. And then they send it back and I'm like, okay, did you color correct it? I can't tell a lot of the times. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll see things that feel strange to me and I'm not exactly sure why. My editing ideas are usually, or like my notes I give people, are usually the way that I would edit a song. You know, where I'd be like I give them song timings where I'd be like, you know, on the third bar, the fourth beat of the third bar, have it switch right on the snare. When the snare hits, have it go to that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And a lot of times they don't like that. They want time. Like, tell me at 1 minute 45.3 seconds, hit it. So, you know. So that's it. I will say that almost every video I've ever done came out different than how I envisioned it in my head. Almost all of them.
For better or for worse, or variations?
Usually for better. Usually for better. I think Morning in America came out something like what I envisioned. Only Life I Know was way better than what I thought it would be. I didn't have a whole lot of high expectations for that, and they just did an incredible job in my mind. You know, Shine On was, I liked that one. I was hoping to see more emotion in the characters in the Breaking Dawn video. And I'm not exactly sure, like, I guess I was thinking it would move different. I wasn't mad at the direction that he did. That was an artistic choice. You know, it's one thing when somebody just doesn't have the skills to do something or the resources, and then there's another thing when they make an artistic choice for it to be different. And so the way that the characters move on that video isn't quite how I envisioned it, but he did it like that on purpose. You know what I mean?
Right.
It gave it kind of a playfulness. You know, they kind of felt like old toys or something. You know, it was a little different than what I envisioned it. I wasn't mad at it. I thought it was good, though. I was still happy with the video. It was just different than what I envisioned.
No, I love that video. But I can see how, yeah, the the movements and the expressions are so wooden. I can see if you know, did you envision it, you know, in the beginning, just not as a final product, but a possibility of having live actors before you switched to animated? Was there some vestige of that in when you were evaluating it?
Yeah, to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. To a certain degree. I mean, once you know, the director is an artist too, and you know, you're commissioning them, so they're trying to do what they think you want. But as, you gotta like let them be artists as well, and the best ones are, you know, the ones that you can really let them do their thing, and they're just gonna do it right. But they have to get it. They have to really get what you're going for.
Now, just a quick another tidbit that we didn't get to mention in the beginning of our discussion of lyric videos is, do you know what the first lyric video is of all time?
No.
Well, whenever anybody talks about lyric videos other than us, they usually mention Praying for Time by George Michael all the way back in 1990.
Mm, right, that one. Now, is that your pick of the week, or are you
that
just...
That is not my pick of the week. I'm just dropping some knowledge on
you. You're just dropping some knowledge, beefing up the show notes, letting people know that because George Michael was not willing to be in his music videos, that he originated the music video. Thanks for dropping that in and letting me fill in the gaps.
Right, well, we should just mention this is 1990, heyday of music videos, and George Michael does not want to appear in his music video for Praying for Time, so they make essentially a lyric video, black with white text with the lyrics, and this, you know, was such a novelty that it actually got into rotation, and pretty heavy rotation on MTV for several weeks in 1990, so there you go, there's a large gap, but then now we are here again in 2012 dealing with a lot of lyric videos.
That's crazy. Big, it's like full circle almost. Each circle takes 20 years. So what, I don't know. So you know what else, you know, doesn't take 20 years is picks of the week. What's your pick of the week?
I thought you were going to tell us your pick of the week.
Oh, you want me to go first? Because that would require me to find one. And so
you look at music videos all day and you can't pick one.
Well, because I love them all so much, and I usually do like an eeny, meeny, miny, moe until you finish, and whatever video okay, I'm pointing at. Okay, great.
So my pick of the week this week is a band called Fort Lean and a song called Sunsick. And this is directed by Ethan Berger, I believe, or Berger. I'm not really sure. Ethan, if you're the off chance that you're listening, I'm sorry. Doug, have you ever been hungover?
I have. It's horrible.
It is. And I don't know. There's something about the... I'm not really up a lot in the morning. On the weekdays, I am. But I just don't make it. I don't make the call on the weekends, usually. I find it very odd to be up in the morning and on the weekends, especially after a night of partying. And this video was just... I thought was interesting for its portrayal of, you know, obviously after a night of some sort of drinking, you know, being up in the morning, kind of wandering around, being detached from the world. This guy's kind of wandering around. He's got stains all over his shirt. You could, you know, he obviously has had some sort of experience the night before and is, you know, seeing different people. And you kind of feel disconnected from the world when you're walking around and you maybe haven't got a lot of sleep and you see all these people with normal sleep schedules. I don't know if any of this was meant by the director or the band in this. That was just my personal interpretation. And I thought, you know, the coloring and just the effects and the acting of the lead singer from Fort Lean really lended itself to that. And and they also did a kind of a fun band setup on a beach, which I think is missing from music videos a lot. I don't see the classic band setup on a beach. You guys are setting up all over the place, on city streets, on buses and stuff like that. But what's wrong with the beach? It's nice. It's got sand. The song is great, too. I thought it was just a, you know, not a very overly complicated video, but just a really enjoyable one. So that's my pick, Sunsick by Fort Lean, directed by Ian Berger or Berger.
That's a long last name. Berger or Berger? How is that spelled?
It reminds me of the, you ever seen email addresses that are really terrible to give out over the phone?
Like ones, fit.
No. Yeah. Here we go. Email addresses that would be really annoying to give out over the phone. And I'll put this link in the show notes, but it defeats the purpose for me to read them. But here we go. Mike_2004@yahoo.com. One of my favorites is AAA. That's 6A's@yahoo.com.
Yeah, I get it. Because it's spelled out. Now I, like, all right.
You have to see them. That's the joke. So I don't know. I'm just explaining.
That's great. Jokes you have to see on the podcast. that should be a podcast on its own. Just jokes that you have to see described over the podcast. Anyway. I have a pick of the week finally too, because you said the word beach music videos, and that made me make one up. my pick of the week is by a man named Lil Flip, and the song is Sunshine. And this video is from 2004. The reason I'm picking this video is because it was shot across the street from my parents' house in 2004. My parents live on the beach, and across the street there's a big fancy house. So fancy that it makes for a great background for a hip hop video. And Lil Flip, who you may know from Houston rapping fame, rapping in Houston, made a song called Sunshine. What else?
May know from rapping in Houston. Oh yeah, I know about rapping in Houston. Please tell me more.
You know, because he's from Houston. One of the things very famous for being on the beach is sunshine, which makes my parents' block the perfect place for this video. So check it out. You can see my parents' roof at the beginning. If you pause it, it'll probably like the 14-second point or a little bit around there. So Lil Flip, Sunshine, Doug Klinger's pick of the week.
So there's some pretty amazing things about this video, and one of my favorites is the whole premise of the video, I guess, is that Lil Flip is not spending enough time at home,
right?
The home who happens to be the one across from your parents' place,
right? And ironically, it's not the right use of ironic.
And I guess his wife is like, she goes up to this fridge thing, which doesn't.
How do you know you're assuming he's married, which is,
or his girlfriend or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you're just too traditional for Lil Flip's lifestyle, but whatever. I'll get into this. It is my pick of the week, so I will describe what happens. His parents, go ahead.
So his wife or significant other goes over to this like thing that's hanging on the fridge that's beautiful with like a chrome bezel, but the actual interface looks like something from like 1997. And she like clicks on a calendar date that says Flip in-store appearance, and she's like, oh, shit. He's getting like, oh man, here he goes again with these in-store appearances. And I just want to say, you're in a gorgeous, beautiful house on the beach, and you're mad that he has to go at an in-store appearance?
And what day of the week? It's very important. It's a weekday.
It's a Tuesday.
So, like, he should be working. He should be working. Like, you should expect that from him. God, so needy. Let me just tell you a little anecdote, a little BTS story of that video. Of course, they're shooting a music video at the house in my parents' neighborhood, so all the neighbors are crowding around and looking what's going on. And Lil Flip comes out and takes pictures of people, and this is 2004, so my dad wasn't very good at digital cameras at the time. And my sister goes out to take a picture with Lil Flip, and my dad is taking the picture, and he's like, all right, got it, see ya. And he leaves, and Jessica, my sister's like, can I see the picture? And he's like, oh, I didn't know how to work the camera, so I just pretended. And he didn't, he didn't really take a picture of my sister and Lil Flip, which she has still not forgiven him, because she remains a huge Lil Flip fan. So,
I know, Lil Flip, you can't turn on anything without hearing everybody talking about Lil Flip.
Yeah, Lil Flip this, Lil Flip that, I know, all day.
And then he's in like this, who does record store appearances anymore anyway? Because he's in the record store, he's talking to his wife the whole time he's at the record store, supposed to be promoting his record. And she's on the bed, and then the Flip photo shoot, and it's all this stuff that he's making money from. It's like if my
the
wife went over to get my
house
calendar and was like, clicked on like Monday, and it's like, Adam works today. And she's like, oh, you gotta be kidding me.
It's like, oh, 10 a.m. meeting with Doug. It's like, oh, fucking, What the heck, Adam? Well, I wanted to spend the day on the yacht or whatever, on the little flip beach where you have a car.
I'm so glad that was your pick. I've been waiting for that for a while. And so I think that concludes this podcast. This has been a good one. We've been waiting to talk to Brother Ali and accidentally phoning people we think are Brother Ali. So if you want some more of this, if you want to get in on this, then you should follow us at Filmed Insert on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely still repping our new music video at new music video account. Every day we got so many music videos coming through. And if you want to know what is out today, it's very simple. Just go to filmedinsert.com/today and it'll show you all the videos that are released today that are in the database.
That's all it takes.
And definitely sign up for beta account. Pretty much you get approved the same day for a beta account right now. We've got a lot of users in there testing things out. And if you go to our blog, you'll see an article. We're posting a lot of articles about new features and things like that.
And if you're involved in the production of music videos, then you can sign up for beta and then take over your account in the database and provide all sorts of info about yourselves. So do it.
It's a no-brainer. So everybody, thank you for joining us on this spectacular podcast, and we'll see you guys next week.
So I know we said there was going to be some funny stuff at the end, and there really was supposed to be. There was this hilarious thing where Adam and I called someone who lived in Minneapolis where Brother Ali was from, and we called the wrong number, and we asked for Brother Ali, and the person got upset because they thought we were prank calling them, because when you call and ask for a famous person, it doesn't work out too well. But anyway, we lost that audio, so there's no real funny thing at the end. Sorry, see you next week. There normally is funny stuff here, though, so check it out.